So we're up to the Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, which is five lines up from the bottom. And let's just review what we know from Daf Yud Aleph. If you want to be Mesakein Amavui, Lahakshas Amavui Letiltul, you put either a Korah or a Lechi. The Korah goes at the entranceway into the Mavui. And the question is, what's the shear? What's the minimum size of this Korah? Again, keep in mind that according to Beit Shammai, even if you put up a lechi, you still need a Korah. So our Mishnah, according to Beit Shammai, is always relevant to every Mavui. The Mishnah says, HaKorah Sha'amru, a Korah which was designated to be Machshir Mavui. What's the shear? Rechava kedei lekabel ariach. Ariach is a brick, and it's actually half of what's called a levena. Ariach is half of a levena. A levena is 3 tfachim, therefore an ariach is 1.5 tfachim. So imagine you have a beam that goes across from one coastal across to the other, and you could place on top of the beam an ariach, which is going to be a brick, that's 1.5 tfachim. Now the big question here is, do you actually have to put the brick on top of it? Or is it enough that it has the strength, this beam, that it could hold on to the ariach? So what would now be the width of the Korah? So you might have thought, before the Mishnah spells it out, that you need a Korah that's 1.5 tefachim wide. The Mishnah says no. Dayo l'korah shetei rechava tefach. All you need is that the width of this beam be 1 tefach. Kedei l'kabel ariach l'rochvo. Which means that if you were to place the ariach, which is 1.5 tefachim wide, on the width of the korah, and the korah is only 1 tefach wide, it would be strong enough to hold on to this brick, this half a brick, as we called it. And rechava kedei lekabel ariach, not only does it have to be 1 tefach width, which would be great, which be enough to hold on to the ariach, but also bria. Kedei lekabel ariach. It's got to be made out of a strong substance. This is the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yehuda is going to disagree. But it's made out of a strong piece of wood that would not crumble and not break because of the weight of the ariach. It's got to be able to be strong enough to sustain the weight of the ariach. So then, basically, the relationship between the korah and the ariach is twofold. Number one, the size, the width of the korah is such that if you put the ariach width-wise, and the ariach is 1.5, part of it is going to hang over the sides, that's one half a tefach's worth, but nevertheless, the ariach will still be well balanced on top of this korah, which is 1 tefach wide. Number 2, the korah has to be able to withstand the weight of this ariach, and it would not break. Now, I have a note here. He says that there's another girsa in our Mishnah, which is in the Yerushalmi's text of the Mishnah, and instead of ariach l'rachba, shetei rachba, he has ariach l'arka. Okay, now what that means is that the ariach is situated on top of the korah to the length of the ariach, so the length of the ariach is on top of the korah, as opposed to turning it this way, right, where you'd have the width. So we're not sure which part of the Ariach, which is 1.5, is actually protruding out of the Tefach Korah. Is it on the right side and the left side, or is it when you turn the Ariach this way, so it's not a piece of the Ariach on its two sides, so to speak, but rather on the top and the bottom, because now we're putting the Ariach in that direction. Now, Rashi explains that the point of this entire exercise is that kedeshete nireis kedavar kavua. Right, we kept saying over and over again that the purpose of the Korah is to create a heker, and it's very important that it looks like something that was placed there on a permanent basis. You know, it's not just chaplap, you know, hodgepodge. And what that means, says Rashi, is that efshar livnos olea binyan. That let's say on top of your entranceway, you would want to create a second floor or some sort of an attic or so, which is called a binyan. And your test, your barometer to know whether or not this beam is such a heker, it's kavua, is whether or not you could build something on top of the Korah. Now, this is a little bit strange, because although you can use an Ariach to build something, and the Korah has the strength to hold up the Ariach, it's very unlikely that the Korah is strong enough to hold up, you know, 10 Arichim. You know, one Ariach is not going to give you a building. So what does Rashi mean when he says, Efshar livnos aleha binyan? That's a little bit strange. He quotes here a bir halacha that hatam shetzrichim lekabel ariach, the reason why we need that the Korah should be able to receive and hold on to this ariach is kidei shelo tehe Korah niteles beruach, so that we know and guarantee that the Korah will not be blown away by the wind. If it could withstand the weight of an Ariach, it means it's a solid Korah, and it will not be blown away by the wind. Rabbeinu Yonason, one of the Rishonim, says, "Im oso sochazoka, by making this the Korah very strong, nikar umefursam lakol shehinichua l'shem kvius." He went out of his way to make it strong. Obviously, anybody could see, it's apparent to everybody, that he wanted it to be there on a more permanent basis. It was just temporary. He wouldn't have bothered with this heavy-duty Korah. Mashenkin, he says, Im hi chalosh, if it's weak, and it cannot even hold on to an Ariach, people will think that, you know what, he put this up on a very temporary basis, and they won't get the message that this is a heker. You know, to tell the Bnei Rishus HaRabim that this Mavui is now designated as a separate area for private use. He says, Lo dai bazeh shetehe bria v'chazok l'achzik ariach echad, el etzricha shetehe yachol l'achzik harbe arichim l'chol orech hakora kishir rochav pesach ha-mavui. So Rabbeinu Yonason goes even a step further. He says you have to make sure, you have to guarantee that the strength of this beam is such that if you put these half bricks straight across from one coastal to the other, you know, the entire entranceway of the Mavui, from one end of the Korah to the other end of the Korah, it would still be able to withstand that weight. Then it's a Korah. Wow, this is a big chumrah. I mean, we learned the Mishnah, and we thought that the Korah, it's sufficient that it could hold on to one Ariach. He's saying, no, you have to imagine the entire Korah from one end to the other is filled with Arichim. Now he quotes the Ritva, that Tzricha HaKorah Shetehe Bria Kedei lekabel shura shel arichin lerochvan. Okay, so that's more or less what we saw in Rabbeinu Yonah's son. And he says, Tzricha shetehe muchzekes, machzekes arboim arichim. So the Ritva says that you should be able to put 40 arichim. Now, where does he get the number 40 from? I can't figure that out. I mean, everything should depend upon the width of the entranceway into the Mavui, from one coast on the right to the one on the left. This I don't understand, the magical number 40 arichim. So I guess maybe we'll figure that out as we go along. So let's take a break. I mean, there's a lot more here to do in the note, but I want to go on to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda has another shita that's much more lenient than that of the Tanakhama as far as the requirement for a Korah is concerned. And he says that Rechava afal pisha ein bria. I agree with the Chachamim that the width of the Korah, the minimum, has to be one tefach. But I disagree with the Chachamim that it has to be so healthy and so strong that, as we said before, it would never break. And therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, Hoysa shel kash vishel konim, if the Korah was made of straw or reeds, which are clearly not bria, they're not very solid, durable substances, is roem osa ke'ilu hishal mateches. We make believe it as if it was made of the strongest material, of metals. In other words, we don't really require that it actually, that this Korah could actually withstand, you know, the weight or the winds, but we just need a certain size, in this case a certain width, and once we have that width, that's enough. We can always imagine that it was made of a different material, different substance, in such a way that it would certainly last. And he says on the bottom, why does Rabbi Yehuda say, Ki'ilu shi'mal techas v'lo nokta shal eitz? He says, Ein zeh l'loshen guzma. You know, he's using an exaggeration. You know, who would put up a korah that's made of metal? But he wanted to say that we see it as if it was a very strong korah. So he exaggerates it. He says as if it was made of metal. Next, what else does Rabbi Yehuda tell us? Let's say the korah was akuma. Akuma means it's an arch. It's a semicircle. Now, if it's a semicircle that goes from one coastal to the other, then clearly there's no possibility of putting an ariach, of putting a brick on top. I mean, obviously the brick is going to fall and who knows what's going to happen, chas v'shalom. And nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says that roen osakili pshuta. It doesn't faze me one iota, says Rabbi Yehuda, if it's an archway. It still is a korah and is valid to be matir a mavui. And therefore we imagine as if it was straight across, flat, from one coastal to the other, in such a way that it would certainly hold on to an ariach. Furthermore, agula, let's say he takes a log. Imagine a gigantic log, which is round. You know, it just cuts down a tree. Now, the thickness of this log is one tefach. We'll explain what measurements would guarantee that the width of this log is a tefach. But one thing is clear, you cannot put an ariach on top of a log. It's round and it's just going to fall. So Rabbi Yehuda says, it doesn't bother me again. Roen osa ke'ilu hi merubas. I imagine that this log was square. And if I could square it in such a way that I guarantee that I have a tefach going across, then that's fine. Because again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, all you need for a korah is the width of one tefach. Now, how do I know that the width of this round log is a tefach? So again, you have this gigantic round log that goes from one kosel to the other, and it's round. And we're going to imagine as if it was pshuta, merubas, as if it was straight, and it could hold an ariach. But again, we need the thickness of a tefach. He says, "Kol sheyesh be'kefo shlosha tefachim." You know, as you take a rope and you wrap it around the log. I don't mean that literally. I'm just measuring it. So, how much of a rope would wrap around the log? And the answer is three tefachim. Now, we know that pi is, what, 3.14, whatever it is, to get the diameter of a circle, but Chazal operated with a ratio of 1 to 3. They kind of rounded it off. So that if the hekev is 3 tefachim going around, then we know that the circumference, meaning if you draw a line from one side of the log to the other, will certainly be a tefach. And therefore, it's yeshbo rochav tefach, and therefore it's kosher. What I'm not sure about is why Rabbi Yehuda bothers with this hekefo shlosha. Why doesn't he just measure, if you put the log down, what is the distance between the right side of the log and the left side, if you draw a line right in the middle? Let me just see if he adds anything in the note. So first of all, he's worried about this rounding it out. He says, "Afal pisha chachme amada, according to science, nasnu shir acher lechesbon ahefresh bein rochav lehekefo." Right. So the difference between the circumference and the diameter is not exactly 1 to 3. Mikol mekom nasnu chachme midazu l'shiurim elu, shekach yesh l'chashev osan. So don't get nervous about the scientific discrepancy here, mathematics, but that's the way that the Chazal set up the shir. Hekef ha'agul ha'igul hu kafel shlosh pa'amim mirochav ha'igul. Okay. But he doesn't address my question exactly why he needs this hekef business. Ro'en osa ke'ilu hi merubas. Mashma l'chora shanu ro'em es ha'k.
I'm sorry, so the 3 to 1 is basically is pi. I think that's what they're...
Right, it's not, but he's saying scientifically we know it's not so, but as far as the shiurim are concerned, the Rabbanan always said that somebody that has a hekef of 3 has a rochav of 1. It's a 1 to 3 ratio. It's not precise mathematically, but that's for the Rabbanan Shirim, that's the way they set it up. He says, "Mashma lechora shayu roen asakora kilu nitvase for leb kronosov v'merubas tefach al tefach." He says, "Why did Rabbi Yehuda have to add the words ki'ilu hi merubas? That you imagine that this circle, which is the inner part of the log, is cut out into a square. You're adding like little corners on each side, you know, when you put a circle into a square. Why was that necessary?" He says, "Mashma lechora shirona sakora kilu nitvasef oleh bekarnoseha." In all four corners, you add a piece in order to make it square. I mean, that was something if you remember, we discussed the concept like that with regard to a Pesach for a mezuzah. That was called chokikim lahashlim. You know, we took a circle and we made it into a square. Omnom, he says, "Mimashikosav Rashi nifseles, mashma Tahainu sheyinotel ovi ha'igul. The kasha l'dvar she'im yinotel ovi ha'igul o yishar ovi meruba bifnim tefach al tefach. So let's take a quick look at Rashi Dibra Maskel Roim, which is about, let's say, about five lines up before the end of Yud Gimel Amid Beis. And Rashi says, Rono Saki Ilu Himru Bas Nifseles O Chaluka. So if I'm not mistaken, Chaluka means we can imagine as if you planed it, P-L-A-N-E, smoothing it out. But the first pshat in Rashi is nifseles. Nifseles means that you chisel it out. So he says that Rashi's word nifseles seems to indicate that you would she notel ovi ha'igul. One second, what does that mean? Yinotel ovi ha'igul. I'm not sure what the word nifselis means in Rashi. Well, let's just make a note of it, that Rashi is the word nifselis, and we don't know exactly what that means. Yinotel ovi ha'igul. I mean, all I could say is that Rashi's just using another expression to convert a circle into a square. And Rashi calls it nifseles, you know, like you would chip away until you finally made a square out of a circle. V'koshel idvar sharei imi notel ovi ha'igul o yishar ovi meruba. So he's asking, you want to get ovi meruba. In other words, you want to make sure that you have a tefach square. But according to Rashi, if you can actually imagine like chipping away at this log until you finally get it down to a square, then you'll never have one tefach by one tefach. So what does it mean here when he says, ki ilu hi merubas? So that's a question that we have here. Now, is there any mention here, as far as you know, of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel? Where is Rav Shimon ben Gamliel here? Did I miss something? We have the Tanakama, and we have Rabbi Yehuda. I don't know here. In the note he says, Uladas Rav Shimon Gamliel, this may be a Gemara later on, Tzricha Shetei Rechava Kedei Lekabel Shura Shel Arichim Li'arkan Ulefichach Tzricha Shetei Machzekes Esrim Arichim. Oh, I see. You see, Rabosai, it's not fair, because this long note that I began reading before is based on a Gemara later on that we haven't even seen yet. It's a little bit unfair, pedagogically. Apparently, you remember I said to you that we'll need, according to Rabbeinu Yonasan, which the Ritva quotes, we need that it be able to hold 40 arichim. And according to another shita, it has to be able to hold 20 arichim. So that's a sugya that we didn't get to yet. So let's see if we can get to it now. So let's turn to Daf Yudalid Amud Aleph, and we'll start the Gemara. The Gemara says, Tefach? How could it be that the width of your beam is one tefach? Tefach hu mechza boy. After all, you need enough of a beam with a width that can hold on to an ariach. And the ariach, we said, was 1.5 tefachim. So therefore, the requirement for the width of the korah should be 1.5 tefachim. So the Gemara answers, Kevan de Rachav, lekabel tefach, since this korah is wide enough to hold on to one tefach, then either chatzi tefach, as far as the other half a tefach of the orich is concerned, don't worry about that, because malbin le betina, when he would put the the brick on top of the korah, he would line the brick, he would line the beam with concrete. Mashu mehaigisa umashu mehaigisa. So I'm trying to imagine, I don't have a picture for this, maybe you do, but he has a little bit of clay or concrete on both sides of the korah, underneath the ariach, and that on each side is enough to make sure that the ariach is secure. Again, we're going to have a whole long discussion. I'm trying to push it off for a moment as to whether or not he actually has to put the concrete there, or it's just enough that theoretically he could put concrete there. So I'll read to you the Hebrew translation. He says, "Dai berochav tefach." It's enough if the korah is one tefach wide. Kedei lekabel es hariach sherochvo tefach umechtza. Why? Mishum idoch chatzi tefach. Chatzi tefach hachose bekorah mirochav hariach. In terms of how to make sure that chatzi tefach that's missing because of the rochav of 1.5 of the ariach, is malbin lebetina yochol amareach b'tzad hakora tit, mashu mehay gisa ma'at mitzad ze, umashu mehay gisa ma'at mitzad ze, v'yachlik es pnei hatit milamala lahashvoso im hakora. So he smoothens out the surface of the concrete above, such that it is perfectly aligned with the beam, v'kaima, and that's how he guarantees that this ariach will be able to be secured and held up by the beam with the concrete on each side. And therefore, it's enough that you have the width of a tefach. So the only thing that confuses me about this translation is he says, "Yachlik pnei hatit milamala." So I'm not exactly sure where he's telling you to. It's a little bit ambiguous in my mind where he's telling you to put the cement. Now, yesterday, my wife brought me an English translation. Let's see if that helps at all. And he says the following. First, I have to find the place. Just one second. Oh, he says that he can cement a little bit on this side where it extends beyond the korah, and a little bit on the other side where it extends beyond the korah. So far he doesn't help me. Oh, he does have a diagram here. The half brick is centered on the korah, so that a quarter tefach, which he says is one etzpa, okay, a quarter of a tefach, because we want to make up for that half a tefach that the brick is extended. He says a quarter of a tefach of the brick extends on either side of the korah. Okay. Clay is applied under the brick on either side and will fill the gap between the brick and the korah. Gee, I don't understand that either. Okay, so again, he's got clay under the brick, and that's going to fill the gap.
The clay is actually on the side of the korah itself. On the side.
That's what he seems to be saying, Don. Yeah, that he smacks
the
article, he smacks the up the.
Has a diagram showing it.
Yeah, but I don't think the diagram is so great, but if you like it, take it, that's fine. But in any event, no, but I'm just saying that apparently he smacks up the, you know, the clay on the two sides of the korah, and that in a sense extends the korah. And by extending the korah, the extension is exactly, you know, parallel in a straight line up, a vertical line up with the side of the ariach. And in the Hebrew, he says a little differently. He says yachol imarech litzada koratit. He says v'yachlik es pnei hatit milamala. Es pnei hatit milamala. Lashvoso im hakora. So I don't know exactly. He's imagining here that the cement is on top. Pnei hatit milamala. Somehow on top of the ariach. Doesn't make sense. I mean, it should be. It's more likely it should be on the bottom. What does he mean milamala? On top.
Again, there's a footnote here. It quotes the Ritva.
Yeah.
It says it would seem to hold that in order to be valid, a korah must actually have clay cemented to its side.
Oh. Okay. So you're a step ahead of me. I was going to ask you whether this is just theoretical or actual. That's going to be the Ritva. The Ritva holds that you actually need the cement. But I'm just trying to figure out where the cement is. So you're a step ahead of me. So the English translation has the cement on the bottom of the korah, and it fills in that gap between, you know, the ariach, which is extended beyond the width of the korah, and the korah itself. In a sense, you could say he's just extending the korah. In other words, the korah itself is not one. It's not one tefach. It's one and a half tefach. Just that half of it is made of whatever, you know, one tefach is made of a half of it, two-thirds, I should say, and the other third, on both sides, is made of concrete. But the concrete is attached to the sides of the korah. Am I right? He says here, in the Hebrew translation, that where does he put the clay? He says he puts the clay milamala. Right now, that's all I'm interested in. I don't need the Ritva. Again, that's a very important question, the Ritva, whether he actually needs the clay or not. I'm not talking about that question. I just want to know where the clay would be, either theoretically or actually. And for some reason, which I don't know where he gets this from and what it means, he says that the clay is lamala. It's on top. What does that mean? If you could help me out with that. Lamala. You know, I'm tempted to think that...
Parallel to the top of the korah, but on its sides. Otherwise, it makes no sense.
I don't know. He doesn't say it's on the sides. I think he's saying that it's on top of the korah. I'm curious to know, you know, I'm a big fan of Masifta, you know, so you don't have to feel that same existential commitment that I have to feel. But, you know, the Masifta is telling me that he's smoothing out the surface of the concrete milamala on top. And I'm trying to figure out on top of what. Again, let me throw out one possibility here, and you might laugh at me, but maybe what he's saying is that the clay or the concrete is on top of the ariach. Right? So if you're building a building and you lay down a layer of brick, then you put cement on top of that layer of brick, and that prepares you for the next layer of brick. So it could be that what he's saying here is that what you're going to do is you're going to lay down a cement milamala. Again, that's what milamala means, on top. And that somehow, I'm not sure why the cement on top would secure the brick below it. I mean, usually we say the cement on top will secure the brick on top of it. Anyway, now we get to your question, Don. So again, I'm going to read to you a note here. He says, "Ein tzorach laniach sham b'mitzius tit v'ariach." This whole business about putting a brick down on top of your beam, and then on top to boot, you want to add cement to it. That's all theoretically. All you need is rochav hakora. Roy lekach, please underline those words, roy lekach, she'im, theoretically, if they would add clay and then put on an ariach on top, the ariach would be secure on top of the korah. And that's the sheet of the Me'iri, that's the sheet of the Rambam, that's paskind up in Shulchan Aruch. And then in a footnote, he writes, "Aval ayin ritva." That's your ritva that you mentioned before. Then mashma ktsas milashono. It's not crystal clear, but maybe what the ritva is saying is that you have to put the tit and the ariach on top so that you have a beam that could hold on to an ariach. Okay, then. So again, this really touches on what we discussed about Rabbi Yehuda. You remember that Rabbi Yehuda always says, theoretically, we don't need action. The Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda say, we need a beam that, in actuality, if you were to do X, Y, and Z, it would hold on to the brick because you added the clay, but this is all theoretical. That's the sheet of most Rishonim. The Ritva has a little bit of an indication that we have to actually plant our ariach on top of this korah, which is very strange, if you ask me. In all the experiences that we had with the korah, we never saw a brick on top of the korah. All right.
Can I ask a basic question?
Sure.
This is just to point out the width of the korah. It's not that you actually have to have a brick on top of it. It's just what is the actual width of the korah, and it should be this.
Right, but according to the Ritva, again, this is all possibly, the Ritva is saying that you actually have to add cement onto your korah to make up the difference between 1 tefach and 1.5 tefach. Because right now, my friend, as is, you can't put an ariach on top of this korah. The ariach is 1.5. It won't sit securely on the korah. You've got to add the clay. So according to the Ritva, the Chacham say that once you add the clay, or the concrete, whatever word you like, now it's ready for the korah. It's ready for the ariach. And the other Rishonim say, as long as you have the width of a tefach, you could theoretically add clay and then add your ariach, and that's enough. I don't have to add the clay. All right. So let's see. Okay. What else? Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Korah She'omru tzricha she'tehei bria kedei lekabel ariach. So it's not enough that the korah has a width of 1 tefach, but it also has to be very strong. Umamide korah. Wow. We need also to add to the korah something that will strengthen the korah, which is called ma'amidim. Anything that adds permanence or strength or durability in Hebrew is called a ma'amid, which literally translates to something that stands you up. Stand you up, meaning it withstand the forces that try to knock it down. So you need what's called ma'amidei korah. Okay, now what are these ma'amidei korah exactly? So Rashi says, in the third line from the top, Gabi Yesedos. You see that, Rashi? Which means that he actually has to have something, like almost like a framework, that holds the Korah into place. Like imagine some piece of wood that was cut out to the shape of a slingshot, if you follow what I mean. In other words, it has a part that goes vertical and then it spreads towards the right and the left, and then you put the korah in the middle. So you have this ma'amid that's going to actually hold the korah in place, that it won't move one for the other, because the korah is now fit into that ma'amid. And then he says, Einam tzrichim sheyu briyim kedei lekabel korah v'ariach. He adds here, Dai b'kach sheyem achzikin asakor levado. In other words, Rabba is adding another requirement, but he don't go too far. You know, the additional requirement is that you need Ma'amidei Korah. But how strong are these Ma'amidei Korah? They are not so strong that they can hold on to a Korah with an Ariach on top of it. All he needs is ma'amidim that will hold on to the korah. Do you follow? Because if you add the extra weight of the ariach on top to boot, and then you're telling me that the korah now could hold on to an ariach, so then you need ma'amidim that would hold on to the weight of not just the korah, but also to the ariach that's on top of the korah, that would require obviously a stronger ma'amid. In other words, we just need to make sure that the korah could hold on to an ariach. That gives it the appearance of being something, as we said before, that's kavua, that's permanent. And the korah itself, in and of itself, could hold on to an ariach if we were to add the clay and so forth, as we discussed before. Now, the ma'amidim are not able necessarily to hold on to both the korah and the ariach, because again, that's, let's say it's double the weight. I don't know if it's double the weight, because it depends if you have to hold on to one particular ariach, or we discussed before a whole line of arichim that go from one side to the other. But whatever it is, you'll admit to me that there's an additional weight here because of the ariach. Now, the strength of the ma'amidim would be a function of the weight. And if you're talking about strong enough to hold the korah with its ariach, then you need a greater weight. Says Rabbi, no. I require that the ma'amidim could hold on to the korah, so the korah would not move out of place. It's stationary. Once the korah is stationary, all I have to convince myself is that this korah itself has the width that it could hold on to an ariach. Again, with all the trimmings with the clay and so forth and so on. Rav Chisda Amar, Echad Zev Yechad Zev Tzrichim Shu Bereim Kedei LeKabel Korah V'Ariach. He says, not only does the beam have to be wide enough that it could hold on to the brick, but I also need that which is holding on to the beam be strong enough to hold on to the beam plus its brick. So the korah tzricha lios chazaka kidei she tuchal lekabel hariach, right? That the beam has to be strong enough that it could hold on to the brick on top of it, and therefore the machzike korah, those pegs that you add on both sides in order to make sure and guarantee that the korah will be strong enough, they have to be, those pegs have to be strong enough that they can guarantee that they're holding on in place to a beam and an ariach. Because again, the ariach, the korah has to be strong enough to hold on to the ariach, and the korah has to be permanent. What generates the permanence of the korah? It's these ma'amidim, these yesedos that Rashi spoke about. Now the yesedos have to be strong enough to hold on to the korah, which is strong enough to hold on to the ariach, and therefore the yesedos have to be strong enough to hold on to both the korah and an ariach on top of it, which is again an extra weight and will require that the ma'amidim be that much stronger. So we have now machlokas about whether or not the korah gets its own status independent of the ariach, and that would be the sheet of Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Now that the korah has its own status because it has the width that could hold on to an ariach, now I need ma'amidim that could hold on to the korah. And Rav Chisda says, no, The Korah is not an independent entity. The Korah represents the strength of holding on to the Ariach. And therefore the Ma'amidim cannot just convince you or guarantee for you that the Korah won't move from its spot. They have to guarantee that the Korah with its Ariach won't move from the spot. Omar Av Sheshes, Hiniach Korah Al Gabi Mavui. Okay, now he has his Korah set on the entranceway to his Mavui, and now he's allowed to carry. And Paras Olea Machzelis. Interesting. This guy is a tzaddik. What do I mean he's a tzaddik? He goes beyond the letter of the law. He says, you know what, for me, I'm not satisfied with a regular Korah. I want to be fancy. So what does he do? He wants to make not just the Korah that separates his, you know, his Mavui from Rishus HaRabim. He wants to put up a full-fledged Mechitza. So what does he do? He drapes a mat. Let's say in the Chazal's time, when you talk about a mat, M-A-T, usually you're talking about made of wood or reeds. So he's got that this gigantic mat of reeds, and he drapes it around the Korah, and it comes down, 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 till almost the ground. I emphasize the word almost, because that's going to be the sugya that we're dealing with now. And by adding this mat, you know, draped around the Korah, he's essentially created a mechitza that sets off the Korah, the Mavui, from the Rishus HaRabim. I mean, I would give him an A+ for that, but he gets extra brownie points. Guess what? We have a principle called Amosif Goreah. You know, sometimes you add and then you subtract. So the Gemara says, Higbia minakarka shlosha, if the mat that he drapes around the Korah does not reach below 3 tfachim, notice there's an airspace from the ground of Rishus HaRabim up to the bottom part of the draped mat of 3 tfachim, Korah ein kan, umechitza ein kan. He has not only fallen shy of creating a mechitza because he's got open air of 3 tfachim that separates the ground from the end of the of this draped mat, but not only that, he doesn't even have a Korah anymore. Why? So Gemara explains, Korah ain't kan don michse. He's covered the Korah. Nobody sees the Korah. The Korah is completely covered by this mat. Okay, who cares? Forget about the Korah. Let's be mate the Mavui with a mechitza. Mechitza ain't kan. Dahavi la, because this mechitza is called the mechitza shagdoyim bokimba. Once you have an airspace of 3 tfachim, these little small goats will pierce through, they'll break through this this airspace. And even though we've mentioned many times that we have a principle called Pitikra, and we have imaginary mechitzos, and so forth and so on, but not so when you're setting aside and circumscribing an area. If you want to enclose an area, then you can't have an airspace which would allow Gedoyim Bokimbo. This might, by sheer association, remind you of a sugya called Pasei Bros. You remember that in Pasei Bros we spoke about Gedoyim Bokimbo. It's the same idea here. And what does he mean? He means, you remember we had a well, and we put up those four tefachim high, you know, angles, so to speak, on each side around the well, and therefore we set up imaginary mechitzas. So the Gemara had a whole issue, but what happens if the animals or the people will break through those mechitzos? And then we spoke about the distance and, how many cows would fit in 8 cows, this, that, and the other thing. Anyway, what I'm trying to point out is that when you have to set aside an area that's absolutely sealed and closed on all sides, then you can't have too much airspace there. And that's called Gideon Bokimbo. So if the mat would extend into the three tvachim, such that, let's say, the airspace now is 2.5 tvachim, just giving you an example, so nobody's going to go through there, no animal is going to go through, even a small gedi, a small goat is not going to go through, is then that's a valid mechitza. So even if the korah is gone, he can't see the korah anymore, but he has a mechitza. But here, since there's an airspace of three tvachim between the ground and the end of this mat as it comes down, therefore it's gedim bokimbo, and it undermines the status of the mechitza. So Mimanafshach, he's messed up over here. He doesn't have a korah and he doesn't have a mechitza either. Now, this reminds me of another sugya that we had called the Mechitza Tluya. You remember we had that picture of a churva, right? We weren't sure what the word churva meant, right? You have that dilapidated house that fell apart, and some of the walls don't reach the ground, you know, they're partial walls. And we discussed also a case where he wants to take the water out of the sea, if you remember that. So he puts his bucket all the way down, and he draws up his bucket into an area that has mechitzos tluyos, you know, that the mechitzos that don't go all the way down. So here, what we're saying is, in our context of being matir mavui, we're not going to validate what's called a mechitza tluya, you know, just a mechitza that's hanging in air. And whether it's hanging or not hanging depends upon Gideon Bokimbo. Do we have an airspace of three tefachim? Let me just see if he adds anything here in the note number Zion. He says Amachtzelus Atzma Eina Yecholu Lechoshev Kikora Mishum She'ein Lo Heker Kora. Okay, so this mat doesn't look like a Kora, and therefore cannot serve as a Kora. He says, but we do have one man, the Omer, back on Daf Hey, that says Korah Mishum Mechitza. So that means that we don't need a Heker Korah, we just have a Mechitza. He says, HaMachtzeles Eina Yechol Lichoshev Kikorah Mishum She'ena Chazoka. It's not strong enough. Not sure if I would go exactly that way. I would have said that it can't serve as mechitza because Gideon Bokimba. Basava Rashba, im hoisa machzeles gvoa asorat fochim, harei psula mitam achim, ishim shekora gvoa asorat fochim, eno materes. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, Korah hayotza mikosel zeh, v'einu nogas b'kosel zeh. Do you remember we once had a picture of this? There's a korah that's sitting on top of the right kosel, but it doesn't reach all the way to the left kosel. You know, in physics, you'd have to figure out, you know, what kind of weight would be on one kosel such that it could keep the entire korah suspended in air. Or alternatively, shtei koros achas yotza mikosel zeh, v'achas yotza mikosel zeh, v'einam nogo zu b'zu. So he's got a korah coming from one kosel, another one from another, but they don't touch each other. So I can't view it as one continuous korah. So the answer is, can we apply lovud here? What is the distance, the airspace between one korah and the other? If it's pachos mishlosha tefachim, if it's less than three tefachim, so they're very close to each other, eino tzarech lahavi korah cheres. He doesn't need to replace these two korahs with another korah, but rather we can accept this present situation as a korah, midin lavud, because of lavud. Now, I'm assuming, I hope I'm not mistaken here, that in the first case of the Braisa, Yotzeis Mikosel Veinu Noges Mikosel Zeh, that also if it's less than three tefachim from the other kosel, then that would be lovud. Just like we had two beams that came close to each other. Now, shlosha, what happens if the airspace, the distance, is more than three tefachim or more? Tzarech lahavi korah acheres, he has to replace it with another korah. Because basically we need one korah to stretch from one side to the other. And on either side, it's got to sit on the kosel. Unless you can imagine it sitting on the kosel if it's less than three tefachim through lovud. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Pachos Me'arba. Right, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that Lekula, you're allowed to apply the principle of Lavud in four tefachim. And Ein Tzarech L'Korah Cheres, Arba Tzarech L'Avi Korah Fez. But it's more than four, you need another Korah. V'chein, Shtei Koros Hamat'imos, Lo bazu kidei lekabel ariach. The lo bazu kidei lekabel ariach. He says, what happens if you actually stretch out two different koros, one to each other? And why did he do such a crazy thing? Why is he putting two koros and not one? And the answer is that each korah is less than a tefach. But he wants to imagine that if the two koros together, you know, 0.5 plus 0.5 would equal to one tefach. So, im kablos ariach l'rochban, if they're close enough so that when he places this half brick, it would be supported by the two koros, is ein tzarech lavi koracheres, then he's kosher, b'im lav, but if he doesn't have between the two koros enough so that he's got a tefach and it would hold on to the ariach, then tzarech lavi korach cheres. And this leads us to Rav Shimon Gamliel, but we don't have time now for Rav Shimon Gamliel. So let's make a note that we're on Daf Yudalit Amud Aleph and we're up to Rav Shimon Gamliel. And that's what we'll pick up in Mirtz Hashem tomorrow. Okay then?
Thank you. Robert Zahn.
Yeah.
In the upper left hand corner of your screen,